Be'ezah Hashem, we are now beginning our Chumash Shir, our Parsha of the week, Parsha's Korach, and today is the 28th of Sivan Tov Shinayin Ches, corresponding with the English calendar of June 11th, 2018. Parsha's Korach is the next very sad episode that took place in the desert. And just like the story of the Meraglim has affected the Jewish people till today, the episode that surrounded Korach, the rebellion of Korach and his people, is still felt till this very, very day. And why do I say so? Because my Rebbe, Reb Chaim Dov Keller Shlita, I remember distinctly when he spoke to us as Talmidim, going back at least 45 to 50 years ago in Yeshiva, tells Yeshiva, he made a very profound comment. And I like to say it over, and I have been saying it over, I believe, year by year.
Is he still alive?
And, oh yeah, thank God, he is. He's in Chicago, and he's a Rosh Yeshiva there. And his comment was that Korach was the first Reformed Jew. He was the one that has brought rebellion against Mesorah, against the Torah, against tradition. And until then, no one would have had the audacity to stand up against Moshe and Aaron, being simply that they were... They revered Moshe to such an extent that no one would have the chutzpah to get up in public and to be so outspokenly against him, and then create a mob scene and a riot that created such a devastation in the foundation of Klal Yisrael, that we feel this, the repercussions till today. Let's go over the story and then talk about some details and see what we can glean from the parasha so we can walk away with some food for thought. We're going to begin on page 820 in the art scroll, and we're going to start reading some psukim. I'd like to give some commentary on this, and then we'll see what our chachamim have to say about the whole episode. The parasha begins, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohaz ben Levi. Korach took the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohaz, and the son of Levi. And just as a tangential note, it does not say ben Yaakov, because Yaakov prayed that his name should not be mentioned in this ugly, most disgusting rebellion that was a colossal chilul Hashem to the Jewish people. As it says, he took Vidasan Vaviram, he took a side against Moshe, Vidasan and Aviram b'nei Eliav, the sons of Eliav, Va'om ben Peles b'nei Reuven, the sons of Reuven. Vayakumu lefnei Moshe, and they stood up in rebellion before Moshe va'anashim B'nei Yisrael and his people, from the B'nei Yisrael, Chamishim and Rasayim, were 250. In other words, Va'anashim B'nei Yisrael, he took 250 people of the B'nei Yisrael to side with him. These were Nisiyei Eda, Kriyei Moed, Anshei Shem. These included Nisiyim, princes, men of repute, honorable people, and they all stood on Korach's side to complain and rebel. And the Torah continues in Pasuk Gimel, Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aharon, and they congregated upon Moshe and Aharon, Vayomu aleihem, and they said to them, Rav lachem, it's enough for you, ki chol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, all of the people are holy. Ubesocham Hashem, and among them is right. It was Hashem. We were all kedoshim. Umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. Why do you raise yourself above the congregation of Hashem. What was the issue that bothered Korach so much that made him so outspoken? So I made a very simple sketch of the rebellion which initiated this whole scene. I'm going to show you over here a graph here, beginning with Levi. Okay, Levi had three sons, right? Gershon, Kahas, and Merari. All right, Kahas, who is the main player over here, because it's his family, what we're referring to, has four children: Amram, Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel. These four sons were the sons of Kahas. Now, let's go to the next generation. Amram had Moshe and Aharon. He also had Miriam, but she was not in the rebellion. Amram had Moshe and Aharon. Yitzhar, the second son of Kahas, had Korach. Hebron is not discussed, so we don't even put down his lineage. And finally, Uziel, the last one, the youngest of the four brothers, had a son by the name of Uziel. Hashem instructed Moshe to be the leader and Aaron to be the Kohen Gadol. And then he instructed Uziel. Moshe was told by Hashem to tell Uziel that his son Elitzaphan should be the Nasi. Now what happened?
A Nasi
is the prince.
He would be
the prince of Shevet Levi. Oh. Now this aggravated Korach tremendously. Why? Because Korach felt that the honor should have been divided equally. He did not want to recognize that Hashem was the one to give Moshe instructions. He felt that Moshe was dishing out the honor. Moshe took the position of king, and he should have been the Kohen Gadol instead of Aaron. And the truth of the matter is, he had enough Zechuyos, enough merit for him to be the Kohen Gadol. To be a Kohen Gadol and to walk into the Kodesh Kodashim was a death sentence. He knew that that can only be for someone who is fitting, and he was fitting.
But he's questioning Moshe's leadership too, not the Kohen's position.
He's questioning that it's from Moshe, not from Hashem. That's what he's questioning.
Here he's now saying, I really should have become Kohen Gadol. But what really got him to go, really got his anger flared up, is when he was told that the Nasi of Shevet Levi is Elitzaphan ben Uziel, his cousin. He said, what a chutzpah. And he is trying to defend the honor of his father. Who's his father? Yitzhar. How dare you disgrace my father? Give the order accordingly. Give the honor the way it should be. Now, Korach.
Why didn't he give it the firstborn,
the Bechor,
which was
again, let's not make
he's
a,
second in line in this.
Let's not make a mistake. The honor that has been handed out was honor God given. It was given for Hashem. Moshe is just relaying who is getting.
No, I'm not saying. I'm saying Korach being so knowledgeable. Why didn't he say? You should have said. Why didn't you give it to the Bechor's son? Instead of him, the Bechor's son, the one he's ahead of him in the lineage.
Well, who do you mean? Who is the Bechor's son?
The Bechor of Levi.
It's So Shebegula Gershon?
Which one is the firstborn?
Well,
Gershon.
Gershon. So in the meantime, but again, that didn't end up in the discussion because Gershon children were not involved in this whole rebellion at all. It started with Korach in the family that involved Kohath. This is where Korach came into the picture. Now, what happened over here was that Korach stepped over the line, so to say. He went way, way beyond what he should have. Maybe he had a lust for honor, and maybe he had kinah, but he took it to an extent, he took it to an extreme. And what happened was, he ended up using his, we're going to soon quote a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that's going to say, Hakina v'hataiva v'hakavod motzi'in nesa adam min ha'olam. Kina, jealousy, taiva, lust, and kavod, and this appetite, this drive for honor, can drive a person out of this world, which means he can get himself killed. And we see this world is driven by these three elements. The element of kina, of jealousy. Now, I want to explain something to you. All these three things are necessary for society to exist. If there was no kina, there would be no commerce, there would be no competition, there would be no growth, there would be no investing into trying to grow, mm-hmm. There would be no renovations in the world. If you think about
it's necessary.
If you think for a moment, kina is an ingredient that keeps the world growing, but everything has to be within a measurement. Like the marshal is making chalent. You want to get a chalent, you have to have a lot of beans, a lot of potatoes, and a little bit of salt, and a little bit of maybe pepper, and a little bit of spice to get that chalent going, and of course, more water to be sure that it doesn't burn. And all of that is mixed together, you have a delicious chalent. Too much salt makes it impossible to be eaten. You won't go to put his mouth to chalent that is going to burn your lips with the salt. You can't put your mouth to it. All right. So salt is necessary for flavor, but it's in minimal. Kina is necessary. What was the Torah's intention with kina? What was the Torah's mindset behind kina? You know what it was? Kina soifrim tarba chachma. Have jealousy of your neighbor's learning, so that you would want to imitate him and pursue the learning that your friend is doing. Kina soifrim tarba chachma. Kina was a necessary ingredient. And it wasn't an evil in the proportion that it was meant to be. Torah it flourishes with kina if you use it in the right way. But if you use kina to be selfish and try to aggravate your neighbor by getting a better car so he'll feel upset that he isn't on your equal, or have a better house and a fancier pool, and all because he has it, something you want to outdo him. It's like a rat race. Then kina is a poison. Kina rots your bones. People go to their deathbed having been jealous of their friend and not having even acquired half of the amount of the money and wealth that they have acquired in the world to the amount that they really would like to. That's how kina would work too. So kina is something, if it's within limitations, is necessary. But when kina is taken in the wrong way, it's devastating and it's destructive. The same thing is with kavod. Honor, the same thing. A person should have to have a certain amount of self-respect. Should a person walk around with filthy clothing, smelling ugly, having people want to walk away from him? Does a person want to not honor Torah? Covet is an important ingredient. You have to use covet in the right way. To honor the sages, to honor the elderly, to respect people who deserve respect if they've been benevolent and they've given donations to the right places. Honor them. Give them. Listen, how many organizations have been built, Torah organizations have been built because of covet, because of honor, so that their plaque would be put on the building and that their name would be mentioned with honor.
It's not the highest form.
It's not the highest one, but it could be used to honor Torah. It's the covet used again. Covet used in the right way. It can build Torah
for the right reason.
For the right reason, of course. Yes.
Ask a question.
Yeah.
Do you think that if they weren't destined to die in the desert, that Korach wouldn't have done what he did? If they were all going to enter the promised land, do you think that this rebellion, I guess it's a hypothetical question. Yeah.
He was Levi. He wasn't going to die.
Let's put it this way.
He wasn't going to die?
No, he had an exemption.
No,
he had a hall pass.
It didn't say 20 to 60 acceptable.
No.
Levi's were not part of the generation of the Meraglim. But they were not part of the Meraglim, and they weren't going to be part of the dying situation.
Well,
there's not one Levi in the Meraglim.
That is correct. But when the Jewish people cried that night, Levi was included. Remember when Hashem said, "You cried for nothing." That's last week's parasha. You cried for nothing. I'm going to make you cry for something. The Meraglim spanned the breadth and the width of the land for 40 days, and Hashem said, "You will die in the within 40 years, and those over from 20 and older will not live."
Including the Levi.
No.
I'll find out, one second.
The only ones were Yehoshua ben Nun and Caleb ben Yefunah.
But they weren't Levi's anyways.
No, but they were the Meraglim who succeeded in their mission. Yeah. All right, that's the only one. But the question is a valid question. He's asking, had the Jewish people not sinned by the story of the Meraglim, had they gone to Eretz Yisrael, would this have happened?
Right.
Well, but this is happening while the Meraglims are still away.
No.
It's after they came back.
After they came back.
Okay. No, I don't know when it happened. It says.
No, this is right
they
after.
They were obviously very upset, and that they're going to die shortly, and they're going to die in a desert. Were they told?
It was only Moshe was told
about something that he wouldn't question it. He might have been quiet about it and thought it, you know, if everything was running smoothly into the promised land. But now that they're going to die, well, why not do this?
Okay, so I'm going to get into something which
is and you're little. All this here you're saying about
let the rabbi finish. Let me
get to the point. I am going to mention something about that anyway. Maybe a few minutes. The question is a valid question. He's asking, let me just repeat what he said. He's saying, what would have happened if the Meraglim would not have sinned and the Jewish people would have ended up in the promised land? Would this rebellion have taken place? Most probably not. Okay? All right? Yes. The Nesiim were only set up. The Nesiim here was set up to lead the Jewish people in the desert for the 40-year period. And that was one of the reasons why the Meraglim committed their sin, because they were afraid that they would be losing their position of Nesiis. their lofty position. That's one explanation. And they would not have a problem of becoming the Shiim in the Promised Land in Eretz Yisrael, because there was no need for their position then. Then they would have Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron. There they would have the Sanhedrin, lead the Jewish people. There they would have the Beis HaMikdash and Mashiach. And this would all not be necessary. So I said the question is a valid question. And the answer to that question is most probably there would not have been a rebellion. But I just now given you a lot of background. And let's now read on with the story, and you'll see how the story developed. What has taken place because of this insatiable desire and appetite for covet, for honor, that he couldn't stand that his cousin, who was picked by the Almighty to be the Nasi, Elitzofen Ben Uziel, was going to be the Nasi, and Korach was livid about that decision. How dare you skip me? I thought I was going to become Kohen Gadol, and now you're telling me I'm not even the Nasi? How dare you say that? And then he started to reveal. Now let's go into
maybe he should have his grievance with God.
He was going to later on after he was the punished. Let's now read on. Let's move on. Okay. Here we go. We're going to start Pasik right now. We're going to go to Pasik Dalet. Vayishma Moshe. Let's read on, please.
Where?
Vayishma Moshe. Page 820 towards the end of the Chumash. Vayishma Moshe, and Moshe listened, and he fell on his face. And he spoke to Korach and of his whole congregation, saying, Boker, tomorrow, V'yoda Hashem es Ashalo, Hashem will make known, which is to him, there's a kadosh, and the Holy One, the Hikr, they love that which he has brought close to him. In other words, Hashem will show you who is Kohen Gadol, who is what, who he wants to be in charge. That which he wants close to him, he will bring close to him. Zos asu, this is what you shall do. Bring for yourself these fire pans with incenses, all of you will bring these fire pans, Korach and all of your congregants. Usnu behein eish, and put in these fire pans fire. Vesimu alein ketores, and place in them ketores lefnei Hashem mochor. The ketores is a special spice before Hashem tomorrow. V'hoya ha'ish asher yivcha Hashem hu ha'kadosh, that which Hashem will choose will be holy. And rav lachem b'nei Levi, it's enough b'nei Levi that you have already complained, and you've gotten enough honors already. Now, just calm down. We'll see tomorrow. You're rebelling against me? Don't rebel against me. Hashem will show everyone tomorrow who is the chosen one. To continue the story, let's skip a little bit. We're going to go to Pasuk Tesvav. Pasuk Tesvav is page 824. Next page. And after this whole episode, and they spoke with disrespect, Vayichel Moshe Ma'od. Moshe's anger was very, very great. Vayome Al Hashem, and he said to Hashem, Al Tefen El Menchasam, do not turn to their mincha, to their korban. I didn't take one of their donkeys. I didn't ride on any of their donkeys. I owe them nothing. I have not done evil to any one of them. And Moshe said to Korach, you and your congregation shall be before Hashem. You and them and Aaron will tomorrow. Everyone's going to stand in front of the Mishkan, and everyone's going to be tested, and whoever Hashem will want will be picked. In other words, only one survivor, and that'll be only the one Hashem chooses. Moshe was confident that Aaron will be chosen. Korach thought he would be chosen, and the other 250 participants were ready to give up their lives in order for Korach to walk away a victor. Let's now move on, please, to Pasuk Chavav. In the bottom of the page, Vayedabe el Eda Lemor. And after this whole episode went back and forth, and the disrespect that took place, Vayedabe el Eda Lemor, he said to the whole Jewish people, Suru nami al ohalei ha'anashim, move yourselves from the tent of the Harishayim, these evil people, ha'ela. Do not touch anything that belongs to them. Lest you will you'll perish on account of their sins. Very powerful. And guess what happened?
Who did he say this to?
Huh? He said this to all the people who were around the tent of Korah. Okay. He told everybody to leave them. Get away. Please turn to 826. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. I am literally gleaning through the psukim so you get the basic story of what's happening. You have a conversation between Lamed Aleph. You have a conversation here between Moshe Rabbeinu and Korach, and now the Jewish people, and he's warning them, stay away from Korach. They don't want peace. He tried to make peace with them, and they're not interested. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vayikach Chaloso Ledaber, and when he finished speaking, 826, Peter, you have it? 826, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. When he's finished speaking, it's called Advam Ha'ela, Vatiboka Ha'adama Asher Tachteyem, and the ground split underneath them. Vatiftach Ha'oret Espia, and the ground opened up its mouth. In other words, there was an earthquake underneath the tents of Korach and his family and all of his supporters. Vativla Osam, and it swallowed them up, Vesbateim, and their homes. Ve'ezkola Odom Ashelu Korach, and all other people that belonged to Korach. Ve'ezkola Rechush, and all of his possessions. They went into their graves alive. And the ground covered them. And suddenly they were lost among the congregation of the people. They were no longer there. They disappeared. This episode shows us the intense, this is, I would say, probably the worst moment of Moshe's life, when he expressed his anger against the Chilul Hashem that was done by Korach, to the extent that he prayed to Hashem that the world should see, the Jewish people in specific should see, what does happen to a person who rebels against the Torah, who rebels against Mesorah, against tradition, who rebels against Hashem, to the extent that a new creation has been created to destroy them, to swallow them up, and to eliminate them from the world. This story is actually a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, and if here's a siddur, and I'll let you look this up. This Mishnah in Pirkei Avos would be in Perek Hay. Take a Perek Hay in page 576, Mishnah Ches. So this would be not 576, it would be in 572. In 572, uh-huh. Here is a siddur. Look in 572. The Mishnah enumerates the 10 different miracles that took place Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos, And I believe it's the second miracle. Here it says, so let me read it for you. Asara devorim nivru be'erev Shabbos pein hashmasos. There are 10 things that were created erev Shabbos by twilight, right before the sunset. Ve'eluhein, these are they. Pi ha'aretz, the opening of the ground. The opening of the ground is the first. Is the first of the 10 things. This was a creation all way back then for punishing Korach for his disrespect, for his outrageous behavior against Moshe and against the Torah. And he lists the whole 10, but I wanted to show you that this was a miracle that had to be created before Shabbos in order to punish Korach. Could you imagine the repercussions of this person that we needed in order to keep him quiet and to set him straight? The Almighty himself had to create a punishment that would last for all time. This is what we have to deal with for a person who rebels against the Torah and rebels against tradition.
What's the punishment for all time?
We, as my Rebbe said, that no one at that time would have had the audacity to go ahead and rebel against Moshe. The question is like this, and my Rebbe brings this out in Sefer Chideko. A very interesting question. Like, why did Korach wait to rebel after the Meraglim took place? He should have rebelled earlier. He should have rebelled earlier. What are you giving Aaron this position? Give it to me. He should have made a big deal a long time ago. Why did he wait? If he would have done it then, he would have been stoned to death. He would have been stoned to death by all the people who respected Moshe with such awe and reverence.
Why did Moshe have less respect now?
Yes, because then Moshe's respect was at a peak. Jewish people knew at the time of the Egel Hazav that they were very guilty and that they were subject to being killed. And Hashem forgave them. How did Hashem forgive them? Because Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for them. Later on, when the Jewish people sinned by the geese, and there was a terrible plague, and fire broke out and burned many people, by the Meraglim, the whole nation knew that they were punished, having to die from 20 and over in the desert. But then they were upset. Why did Moshe not pray for them and save them the way he saved them at the time of the Egel Azav? But the truth of the matter is, he did pray for them, but he didn't pray that they should be forgiven. He prayed for them that Hashem should shower upon them Erech HaPayim, patience, long to anger, don't obliterate them, have Erech HaPayim. But he didn't pray that they should be, their aveira should be completely dissolved.
So now Moshe was a little bit stained also, he was worn out.
So, no, because of that, and they knew that, they were now vulnerable to Korach's position. He says, they started making fun of Moshe. Moshe's telling the Levim to do all sorts of strange things. We know the Levim had to go through a process. Every Levi had to be lifted. All the Levim had to have their hair shaved. The Levim were a separate group, and they were treated differently. But Korach took the opportunity to make fun of the mitzvah that Hashem told Moshe to do for the Levim. Then he took issue with the talus cut, that they're a talus, and they have the tzitzis. And he planted a critical question for Moshe to answer with the intention to ridicule Moshe. What was the question? He said, we know that the tzitzis has to have one thread. Each has a thread of blue wool. What would be if the entire garment was blue? Does it still need a thread of blue wool? So Moshe says, the Torah says, psil techeles for hayolachem the tzitzis. He says, how could that be? If the whole garment is blue, it should need a thread. If one thread is enough for the whole garment on each corner, certainly if the garment is completely blue, should it be completely free from having to put any threads on the tzitzis? And he ridiculed Moshe and says, you made up your own halachas. It's not true. You're making it up yourselves. And everybody started making fun of Moshe. He said another thing about mezuzahs. What's the halacha? We know there's a krishma in the mezuzah. We know we have the shema, we have v'hafta, v'hayim shemoa. Let me ask you, Moshe. Do we need a mezuzah on the door? Of course. You're supposed to put it. It says, al mezuzah is beitzelcha v'shirecha. And what would happen if the entire room was filled with Sifrei Torah? Do we still have to put a mezuzah to protect you?
Yes.
He says, of course. It says, al mezuzah is beitzelcha v'shirecha. And he starts to criticize and ridicule Moshe. How could you say that? If the little parchment that has a little part over the Shema in it is sufficient enough to protect you in your room, a room that's full of Sifrei Torah is not sufficient enough to protect you? And he ridiculed him again and again. And his companions, his group of people who looked to make fun of Moshe, continued to mock Moshe the entire night. And this brought on this tremendous, tremendous rebellion to a peak.
They were just trying to usurp his powers.
I'm sorry?
They were trying to usurp his power.
Who's
doing that by ridiculing him?
Even a great person.
The one
usurping his position and power.
And take it away.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Like niddling away at it.
Okay, exactly. Exactly. So now what's the bottom line over here? That he used mockery, litzanus, to go ahead and make a mockery of the Torah. Mockery of Moshe Rabbeinu, who brought down the Torah from Har Sinai and taught the Jewish people. What are the Reform Jews doing today to our Torah? They're making a mockery out of our Torah. They're not saying that the Torah is authentic. They are not keeping the Torah because it's divine, and therefore we don't tamper with a single word or letter. I think they even claim that it was put together by a committee of smart people. And therefore, you can change it this way, you can change it that way. When the committee wishes to make these changes, you make those changes. Does he want to do that?
They're questioning the Torah, you're saying?
Yeah, and that's where it all comes from. Who put that poison, that poison pill, of or the doubt of Torah being authentic in the Jewish people?
Enlightenment?
Huh? The Enlightenment, that was where it all started from. That where they got it from where way back when, from Korach. If he had the audacity to be able to do something like that, you hear? Then why can't we not? Well, this is, without them saying those words, they felt it. And that's where they got the strength to be able to speak against the Torah. This is clear. And as a result, Torah was being criticized, and Korach succeeded in bringing a tremendous Chilul Hashem to the Jewish people. So we know right now that, as the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos also says, that in Perek Dalet, we have, if you don't mind, a very famous Mishnah, and with this I think we'll conclude. In Perek Dalet, Mishnah Chaf Aleph, I believe. Kafalno Kafkes, page 570. If you look on page 570, you hear him? Hakina va'taiva va'kovid motzien es ha'odam min ha'olam. Let's not forget, jealousy, taiva, lust, and honor can drive a person out of this world. You have it? You have it? 570? Let's not forget, a person like Korach, if you would ever be able to imagine him, he had probably a very long beard with payas. He probably looked very pious and very religious. He spoke words of Torah. He spoke words with depth of Torah. He was eligible to go into the Kodesh Kedashim, to the Holy of Holies, and not get scorched or burned, because he was on a high level. But if in your psyche, if in your personality you have this jealousy and this craving for covet, then you are very, very vulnerable of becoming destroyed by the fact that it will overcome you. And we have so many examples in our contemporary society where society lives in a rat race of trying to compete with each other. Yes, kina is necessary if it's in moderation. But the way kina is used throughout society today to outbeat your friend, and if you have a million, it's not enough. I have to outbeat my friend that has a million and a half. I'll try to outbeat him with what my possessions. This is all kinah. And then we know about covered honor with politicians trying to look for honor, and they'll promise the world to you. But the truth of the matter is, until they do what they were told or what they promised, it's a different story. All right, it's all part of covet. They're looking for honor, they're looking for praise, they're looking for recognition. And we know that when you look for recognition and people get to know that it's a fake and it's nothing there, it's like a balloon that becomes deflated. And therefore, let's conclude to realize that if we follow the dictates of the Mishnah to say, be careful, kina and taiva and kavod, jealousy, lust, and honor can drive a person out of this world. Let's know if it's done in moderation, then you can live a happy and very wholesome life. But if you don't live according to the dictates of the Torah, then kina and taiva and covered lust. A person has to have a certain amount of love, otherwise he'll never get married, he'll never have children. It's not a necessary evil. It's a necessary. It's a necessity. But again, if it's misused, it's destructive. If it's used in moderation, if it's used with purpose, plan and purpose, then it's life-giving, it is fortunate for the person, and it gives you life of bliss and life of success. Maybe all we follow the ways of the Torah, that we follow everything according to the Torah's advice, and we will be blessed with health, happiness, and prosperity. Have a wonderful day.